Ever since the novel coronavirus swept through New York's nursing homes last year, the state's rules and regulations governing how we care for the elderly have been constantly examined and even rewritten, and that process is continuing even as we emerge from the pandemic. To discuss future elder care changes under consideration by state lawmakers, we're joined once again by Senate Aging Committee Chair Rachel May, a Syracuse area Democrat. Welcome back to the show, Senator.
Thanks, Dave. Good to be here.
It's good to have you. So up first, we have a bill of yours that establishes a state-level program of all-inclusive care for the elderly, which passed the Senate during the final week of the legislative session in June, but never went anywhere in the Assembly. What is the deal with this bill, which sounds very ambitious since it has the phrase all-inclusive in the title?
PACE programs are pretty ambitious. They are trying to provide really wraparound care, a whole suite of services for the elderly. It's kind of like managed long-term care, but I met with some of the PACE providers and it sounded like it's broader and more sensitive approach to providing the care. But the problem is they aren't recognized the way the managed long-term care MLTCs are, which have a very regulated and predictable way of they're funded. With the PACE programs, it's kind of this suite of services, and each one comes from a different budget, and it's really hard for them to stay sustainable. So our bill is to regularize them so they can have those predictable budgets. They can be recognized really as a legitimate full-service opportunity for seniors, and in some ways, I think, preferable to the MLTCs.
And to be clear, what we're talking about here is a program that directly provides medical care, home health care, and social support services. And I think there's currently over 5,000 New Yorkers who are utilizing these services to remain, you know, I guess, in their communities and potentially have a better quality of life than, say, moving into an institutional setting.
Right, which is always going to be one of our priorities because the institutional settings are very expensive. They are important to have for certain people, but I think too many people end up there because they can't get the wraparound services they need in their home.
So this idea of all-inclusive services does not sound like a cheap option, but is it ultimately more cost-effective than institutional settings?
Well, it's hard to measure that. There are some issues about, you know, if somebody really needs round-the-clock care, sometimes nursing homes provide that at roughly the same cost as bringing it into their home. But in general, if people are able to be somewhat independent, then staying in their homes is far cheaper just because the cost of a nursing home is so high. And a lot of that is borne by taxpayers because it comes out of Medicaid. Generally, most of the people in nursing homes are supported by Medicaid, and
right.
It's a very high cost to the state. It's one of the things that makes our healthcare budget so high. So anything we can do to help people stay in their homes longer or stay in communities where they get support that isn't at the level of skilled nursing facilities, then that's a good thing for us as a state. It's a good thing generally for the people who need the care and for their families and their communities and just in general for our budget.
And the focus of your bill is on, I'd say, streamlining, simplifying. And those are obviously laudable goals in the healthcare system that seems to be built on top of itself with, you know, this Byzantine, really complex system. Is your bill trying to operate within that existing framework and just making things simpler? Or should I think of this more akin to blowing up an existing structure?
You know, for this one, I would say this bill in particular is much more the former. It's just formalizing this. But I got to confess that I have a goal of blowing up the structures a little bit more. One of the things that is shocking when you go through the budget process in New York State, I'm on the health committee, and the health budget is divided in two parts. There's the public health budget and there's the Medicaid budget. And they do not talk to each other. They are totally separate things. And so we can put $1 million in the public health budget for Alzheimer's prevention, for example. And we know that that may save, I'm just making numbers up mm-hmm. here, but that might save, you know, $15 million in Medicaid costs. But we can't do that cross accounting. So when we do preventive care, budgeting for preventive care, it's just considered an expense rather than an investment in something that would bring a pretty great return. And I am deeply frustrated by this aspect of our budget that we can't do that kind of cross accounting, because I can't tell you how many times people come to my office and they have a great idea and they say, if we just put $1 million this, it'll save this and this and this and this. And I'm like, yeah, I believe you. And I don't have the power in the budget to make those calls. So I definitely think we need more ability to do that.
What is it then that you run up against, whether it's this issue or the idea of a more extensive overhaul? Is there just institutional complacency, or are there other forces? Are there other interests that like the current system, and that's what you're pushing up against?
It's really the imbalance between the legislature and the executive in New York State when it comes to budgeting. It's the crazy constitution we have that gives all the responsibility to the legislature to provide for all these different programs, but it gives the power of the budget to the executive. And I know Senator Krueger has a bill for creating a legislative budget office mm-hmm. that would allow us to actually do the research, have the numbers, make the case for why, you know, we should invest over here in order to save over there. But right now we don't have that.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking with Senate Aging Committee Chair Rachel May, a Syracuse area Democrat. So then, does that mean what you're saying is that when you make the argument that, hey, if we made an investment in this, it'll save us money on that, that whether it's Department of Health or the Division of Budget, they're not receptive to those ideas, or they don't believe it, or they have a reason for what they're doing?
Well, I'm not in the room where those kinds of decisions are made, but I have asked these questions at our budget hearings, and I've said, you know, if you all talk to each other, if we propose over here, you know, because it's not just in health, in environmental protection, mm-hmm. for example, you know, there are investments you can make in flood control that then are really good for preventing harmful algal blooms or whatever, you know, but the benefit comes to some other part of the budget from where the outlay would be. And so if you ask them, you talk to each other, does the Department of Health, when it puts its budget together, are they also talking to whatever, you know, the Department of Labor or, you know, wherever these synergies might be possible? And they'll say, oh, no, that's the budget director's call, those kinds of things. So it's very compartmentalized. Very frustrating from a legislative standpoint. But I think it's also an opportunity for something we can change at the state level that could really make a difference and reduce the costs and improve the outcomes in a number of areas.
So turning to another bill that caught my attention, you have one that creates a nursing home resident quality and safety study to look at the implementation of a frailty index score for New York facilities. What is a frailty index score, and why is it potentially a better way to gauge the work that's being done at our nursing homes?
Right. So again, this is kind of a technical bill, but it is potentially a really, really valuable tool, I think. In nursing homes, typically they kind of have a broad brush where anybody who's in the nursing home, they have a set of things. We're gonna check their vital signs. They should shower X number of times a week, or, you know, whatever. They've just got a system for people. And the frailty index where it's used is something that allows them to, you know, say, well, this is somebody who's got really good muscle tone and isn't overweight, and we can have a regimen that's tailored to this person's physical abilities as well as needs, and somebody over here might have a different set of needs. So the frailty index allows them to measure that and really kind of tailor the services they provide to what that person really needs and what will help them have a better quality of life for a longer period of time.
Do you think it's possible that the results from a study that's based on this frailty score will show radically different results for our nursing homes than what we think of now?
Well, I don't know if I would say radically different, but I would definitely say that it would be much more less standardized and more tailored care for the nursing home residents. I think one thing you find, and people, when we talk to people who have close relatives in nursing homes, they'll often say, well, they just are being left in their bed all the time, and then they, you know, because nobody has time to come and get them up, and if they require a walker or something like that, they'll be really restricted from being able to move around. And with the frailty index, you could at least have certain people having a lot more freedom or a lot more activity than they do at present. And I think, yes, then you would see better outcomes and you would see people being happier in the nursing homes and not feeling like they were just being warehoused, which I think some people feel.
And finally, during the pandemic, you focused on creating safe visitation options at nursing homes, which have largely been on lockdown since the arrival of the novel coronavirus. How accessible are these facilities currently for friends and families of residents who want to visit?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question. This is something we spent a lot of time on. We started hearing over a year ago from families who were really frustrated that they couldn't visit their loved ones in nursing homes, and people were literally dying of isolation, of the lack of not just attention and hugs and, you know, just closeness, but also nobody was keeping an eye on whether they were eating or you know, if their cognitive abilities were declining. So it's really important. So we started working on it, and we looked at what was going on in other states, and we passed a bill that was signed in March, I think, by the governor, that was to allow people to designate personal care visitors who could come in and visit them on a regular basis, even during the pandemic. And the problem was that got signed and it got implemented only about 2 weeks before the governor ended the state of emergency, which the bill was all designed for. In the case of a state of emergency, there needs to be a system of visitation. So that bill is no longer active right now. And some of the nursing homes have gone back to making it very, very hard for loved ones to come in and see the residents of nursing homes, whether it's restrictions on, you know, you can only come in for half an hour every 2 weeks, or you can only see them out in some common space, you can't go in their rooms, and all of those things are really hard on the families and the loved ones, and they mean, you know, often nobody is paying attention to what the issues are that might be, that person might be facing. So we sent a letter yesterday to the governor. 30 of my colleagues joined me in signing that and asking that we can go back to pre-pandemic levels of visitation in the nursing home, because the vaccination levels are very high for the residents. I think it's relatively safe, and it's really unsafe to have them not having the visitors. So we're working on multiple fronts on that. We'll introduce a bill that will do what my bill did, but not in a state of emergency, I think. We may consider fines on nursing homes that are preventing people from having visitors. There are all kinds of things that we're throwing around, but for right now, we hope the governor will do the right thing.
Well, we've been speaking with Senate Aging Committee Chair Rachel May. She's a Syracuse area Democrat. Senator, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Dave.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.